centuries, dogs have been used for hunting. They triumphantly track down your prey and return it in a clenched jaw with a sense of pride. I'm not saying that all men have to be hunters to own a canine, but man must remain faithful to the spirit of man's best friend. Your dog is a vigorous companion, not a toy. In order to be a true man, your dog must be bigger than a toaster. If that isn't clear enough, you must be able to play frisbee with your furry friend. It also can't cower at the sight of squirrels. And most importantly, your dog should not be able to fit in a bag. The only exception to this rule is if your name is Arnold Schwarzenegger and you're the guy from True Lies. You are exempt because you have rode a motorcycle through a shopping mall and leapt onto a flying helicopter. To women, this may not make much sense. You say, a dog is a dog, but it's a guy thing.
Welcome to 12 Stone as we continue our series of It's a Guy Thing. And we're looking into the life of Samson, who without a doubt gets first place in the strongman contest. But Samson has a role to play, and it's obvious from the beginning of his life. So let me just bring us back to some scripture we've previously read in this series. Chapter 13. It tells us he was dedicated to God from the womb, a Nazarite. Kevin Queen talked about that, gave some detail, but here's what I want you to hear in verse 6. And he will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. You got to get it. He's going to take the lead. Let me just give it to you. His role, in short, is to protect and serve. Everyone across all camps, to say it with me. His role is what? In short, to what? Protect and serve. One more time, so we've all got it. His role is what? To protect and serve. And I don't think that's exclusive to Samson. In fact, I'm convinced that that is God's created call on every man. Protect and serve. In fact, I'm convinced that that's God's invitation for all of us. Now, protect and serve, those are pretty simple words to say. But those are incredibly demanding and difficult to make good on. You see, Samson had to protect and serve, and of course that would include from marriage to family to kids and community, which is the norm for the rest of us men. But his was greater. His was for a nation. His was for all of Israel. And those are very difficult things to deliver on. In fact, I'm convinced that my dad failed to deliver on protect and serve, which is why our family blew up. I'm not saying my mom didn't contribute anything. I'm just saying I know my dad failed kind of like Samson. And they didn't have a good start anyway. Parents were pregnant in high school, both dropped out. Married, no education, kind of lazy, living with their folks. By the time they became Christians some years later, I think my dad sincerely tried. I mean, I think he gave a real good shot at trying to be a protect and serve kind of man. But discovered that it's tough. Hear me. It's tough to be a spiritually tough man. That's demanding. It's difficult. Eventually, the marriage blew up. Family blew up. My two older brothers went with my dad, my sister, myself with my mom. And my mom said, for all practical purposes, many times since then, Kevin, you don't have to be like your dad. You can grow up to protect and serve. But how? I mean, how do you actually pull that off? Where do you find the strength to become that tough? I mean, I think that's a question you ought to jot in your notes. Where do you get the strength to be that kind of tough? Now, I've sought to be that kind of man, imperfectly, undoubtedly. I'll be quick to confess. To be the kind of man that protects and serves in his marriage, in his family, over his kids, in my career and community. Evident in the way I would kind of care for my own kids, four children, one of which is a daughter, my only daughter, Julissa. Would navigate things like in her early stages at that adorable three-year-old. She would wake up way too early on my day off. Not get a clue. And come in and stand right there at the bed and breathe on me. If I didn't wake up, she'd take those cute little fingers and she would pry my eye open, literally. Say, Dad, is Barney on? I don't know and I don't care. All the way into her 11-year-old phase where she started getting those Google eyes for guys and guys looking at her, and I realized I need to protect. So I decided I bought her a ring for her ring finger, put it on her when she was 11 years old. All through middle school, she wore that ring. Bought her another one, high school, wore it all through high school. Bought another one for college, all through college. Why did I do this? So everybody would know she's taken. This girl's not free and available. Man, you want this girl, you're going to have to get through me. She's protected. Marcia and I have prayed over the years that God would raise up the man who would be the right man, worthy of taking that ring off. And this past weekend, the daddy ring came off. And my daughter is officially engaged to Mr. Kevin Weigel, and we would like you to celebrate with our family. So this is my daughter, Julissa, who is officially engaged to Mr. Kevin Weigel, you lucky man. And it's real, so the ring is off, the new one's on, and we look forward to a wedding coming up sometime in next March or April. We're working on a date of 2013, so we're looking forward to that celebration. The deed has been done, and wow, our lives are changing. So thanks, guys. Thanks for celebrating with us, church. What an awesome thing for our family. Now, I want you to know something, that when Kevin came to me, and she at least chose well by name, when Kevin came to me several weeks back and asked for her hand in marriage, well, can you imagine the conversation we had? Yes, you can, and I'm not going to give you all of it. But I'm going to give you a slice of it. I said, as long as you promise to rise up, to grow from boy to man, and you embrace the duty to protect and serve. Literally, you make a vow to me that you'll protect and serve before you ever make a vow to her. I'm serious. And he did. And I believe him. But where on earth is he going to get the strength to be that kind of a tough man? I mean, more than not fail. It's the minority in our world that actually live that out, not the majority. And I think that Samson would say it's tougher than I thought. If Samson had a chance to kind of appear, if God would allow him to join us today, wouldn't that be awesome? I have for you my guest today, Samson. He's appeared from thousands of years ago. And we have a little conversation. Men, do you know what I think he would do for us? I think he would say, men, listen to me. I won the strongman contest, but I was not tough enough to protect and serve. I want you to learn from my mistakes. In fact, I think he'd sit down and tell us the things we need to know and the things we need to do. So grab your teaching notes and let's consider what he might say to us. Here we go. What we need to know. First one, primary thought is this. The physical and spiritual, write it down. The physical and spiritual are shared worlds, not separate. The physical and spiritual are what worlds? Shared worlds, not separate. Man, we have this gift, this ability to compartmentalize, don't we? We can just cut things off and say, well, that's that compartment, that's that. We can separate things out. It's kind of a gift. It allows us to go from work to activities to event to family and all kinds of stuff and almost seem disconnected. This gift to compartmentalize, however, needs to be corrected when it comes to the spiritual and physical, because some of us begin to separate that as if those are completely different, separate, disconnected worlds, and they're not. And I think Samson would go after that. In fact, I think he would tell us that if you become one of those who believes the world is only physical, and that's the only way you measure toughness. I think he would tell us that men who lean into the world as predominantly physical will mismanage a couple of things in this world. They will tend to mismanage anger, and they will tend to mismanage lust. I want to unpack that. Let's spend a few courageous moments on that. I think he would tell us that you tend to struggle with anger, you tend to struggle with lust, and maybe it's because you don't understand that the physical and the spiritual are connected. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I'm going to take you into a story if you want to follow along. Turn to page 252, the book of Judges. We're going to jump into a section of Samuel's life and see what I mean by this physical and spiritual connection. And here's what I mean. Look at chapter 13, verse 24. It tells us the part where the woman, his mom, gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew and the Lord blessed him. I want you to see this. The spiritual, the supernatural, God himself is involved in Samson's life. Look at verse 25. And the Spirit, the what? Spirit of the Lord began to stir him. Oh, you got to get a hold of this, man. The spiritual is not separate from the physical. You can't get into his life and say, well, his strength was purely physical. Oh, no. Pay attention. In fact, look at chapter 14, verse 6. A young lion comes after him. And what does it say? It says the Spirit, the what? There we go. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon Samson so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. You get this? The spiritual and physical are shared worlds. The spiritual is not separate. It was God who came upon. It was spiritual strength. Stay with me. Let's turn over to chapter 15, page four, or verse 14, next page. Here we get another story where he is bound by the Israelites being handed over to the Philistines. And you'd have to read and get the details of the story. But what happens in that story is he's handed over to the Philistines. They're all celebrating. It's awesome. We're going to conquer. And what does it tell us? The Spirit of the what? The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon Samson. Hey, he tore off the ropes as if they were little strings. And then he got a hold of a donkey jawbone, and he wiped out 1,000 Philistines. Samson would sit right here and tell us, listen, men, listen, all of us, physical and the spiritual, they're not separate. They're shared worlds. And you need to know this. In fact, you look, by the time you get to the end of his life, when he gives in to Delilah's nagging and finally confesses the source of his strength. Then what does he say? What's the source of his strength? His long hair. It, really? Was the real source of his strength his hair? Oh, no. It was symbolic. The source was spiritual. In fact, you come near the end of his story, and it'll tell you in chapter 16. When he awoke from his sleep there with Delilah, heard that the Philistines are coming and upon you, he said, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. Right there in verse 20. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. I'm going to tell you, when the Lord left him, his strength left him. He would tell you that the source of my strength was not physical, it was spiritual. And I didn't know that. It took me a long time to learn it. Man, we need to learn this. He would tell us, he would teach us, he would help us learn from his mistakes. Don't separate those. Until you see him at the end of his life when he finally offers a prayer to God. Oh God, strengthen me. You see, he would sit here and tell us, if you think this world is only physical and you think that's the mark of being a man, I'm telling you, you're going to mismanage a couple of things in this world. You're going to mismanage anger. You're going to mismanage lust. And those are the things that will take you down. Let's talk about anger. Our tendency to move from man to boy, emotional boys. Let's talk about blowing stuff up. Let's first talk about the fun side of blowing stuff up, shall we? Because as guys, I don't know, I can't speak for the guys, but I'll just say, how many guys like Mythbusters? How many guys are intrigued, enjoy, like, why? I love that stuff. You know why? Because they blow stuff up. They get to. It's a job I think would be an awesome job if your job is just to go blow stuff up. In fact, I just watch. All you're going to do is watch about a minute and a half a video doing nothing other than blowing stuff up, but it puts a smile on your face. I like watching stuff blow up. Check it out.
In Black Powder Shark, 400 pounds of explosives turned Hugo into Hugh Gone. In 22,000-foot fall, 500 pounds made a train station turn torpedo. And in cement mix-up, 800 pounds made a truck take flight. But all will be eclipsed right here, right now. Because at Ground Zero, 500 yards from the bunker, Van's team are packing a 20-foot-high wooden tube with 5,000 pounds of high explosives. But can a bang this big really create diamonds?
Okay, you guys ready to make some diamonds?
Yeah.
Follow the hole!
Strap yourself in. This one's going to be gigantic.
Charging. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Times the might of any other Mythbusters boom, it sure was a blast.
Now, don't you love the feel of that stuff? It puts a smile on your face. And by the way, women will start loving the idea of stuff blowing up if it produces diamonds, right? So then everybody would be happy, all the guys and all the gals. We could get together on this. See, love stuff blowing up. I want you to see their faces. In fact, let me just tell you this. It's fun to see stuff blowing up, but look at it. It's funner to do it yourself, isn't it? Man, it's just more fun. This past year, about a year ago, went on a motorcycle trip, got to hang out with some friends in Arizona, and some officers took us out into the desert, brought all kinds of guns, Tannerite, set up the bombs in various locations, and we got to shoot stuff all afternoon. And if you don't believe me, I'm just going to show you just half a minute of my utter joy, and then I want you to see the smile on my face. Because I'm shooting a real deal machine gun. Check it out.
You just went through 200, bro.
Here's what I want you to see. You ready? Right there. See, if you had just delivered 200 rounds from a machine gun, show your neighbor right now the smile that would be on your face, man. Go ahead. Show the neighbor. See, because you know that would be just that, like, I'm in awe. Yeah, can I tell you something? It's a spiritual experience. It's like equal to my devotions together. I mean, just huge smile on your face. See, it's fun to blow stuff up. But if you're blowing stuff up with your temper and your anger, not so fun. In fact, let's just have a candid conversation, shall we, church? Men, about anger. See, when you think it's just a physical world and there's no spiritual, and you don't know where to find the strength to be tough, so you just decide to be a boy, an adolescent, emotionally immature, pacify me, and life just becomes about you. Well, of course you're going to be angry. And every time you get angry, everybody else needs to live inside the wake of your anger. See, Samson, chapter 14, verse 19, burned with anger. It wasn't mature. It wasn't for godly reasons. And he blew stuff up. You follow his life and you discover he blew up his whole life. Unchecked anger. I grew up in that kind of home. And that kind of anger grew in me. I grew up in a home where there was verbal and violence. So I get it. If you say, oh man, you don't know what I grew up in. Oh, it's just, okay. But can I tell you something? I my world, we went there. all kinds of things. You would never let anybody outside the family ever hear words that were inappropriate, out of line, literal physical fights, terrifying. And then everybody's supposed to act normal. Once Dad loses his temper and goes volcanic, we're all supposed to be normal? Really? He says, okay, now we're all normal. Dad just got it off his chest, vomited on all the rest of us. And then we go to church. We look good when we go to church. See, I know you can show up at church, look good, and live very differently at home. And listen, I'm not being judgmental. See, many of us, if not most of us, struggle with anger issues. And by the way, this isn't just for men, but we'll talk as if it's just men, okay? And the rest of you can listen in. And I grew up in this, and it grew in me. I remember the time I pulled a knife on my brother and said, I'll kill you. I wasn't joking. I said, I'll kill you. You ever threaten me again like that? I was 12 years old. I'm in college, a ministry student. Lose a lousy foosball game. I mean, are you serious? Just a foosball game? And so angry, just let the rage vent, put my fist through the wall. Really? That's manly? I mean, I promise you, there was something in me that said, that's manly. I mean, really? Is that man? I mean, this world reinforces, oh, there's a man, that's good, that's really... Really, is that manly? Or is that weakness? I mean, I grew up thinking that's manly. I step into my marriage and I got this idle threat sitting in the background of our marriage. Honey, you don't want to ignite this fuse. You ignite this and the animal anger comes out and you'll be sorry. Really? That's manly? That's a solid man. That's protecting and serving in my family. Really, my wife has to live with that? My children need to live with that? Man, when I was messed up. Need to get help. I needed to own the truth of Proverbs 29. And have you ever read scripture and when you get done reading it, you just want to black highlight it because you don't like it? Sometimes I carry a black highlighter and I'm like, I don't care for that. Proverbs 29:11. Let me read it to you. Fools give full vent to their rage. Fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end. What kind of man are you? I mean, I just had to own. I'm a fool. I'm a pastor. I'm married. I grew up in it. It grew up in me. I have a problem with anger. One of the kindest things God has ever done in my life has helped me to own a verse like that, get honest to God, and just acknowledge that my family doesn't have to live with that, but I need strength. I need to be tough, and I'm not tough enough. Where do you get the strength for this? And God, if of the miracles that God has done in my life, one of the kindest things God has ever done is deal with the core of anger and bitterness. And break this controlling thing in me. Not like I'm all done and I rise above anybody else. But I can tell you, he gave help and healing. And it doesn't control me as it once did. How about you? And how often do you give vent to your anger? I know we often feel it, but do you give vent? How often? Daily, weekly, monthly? Do you get verbally violent? Physically violent? Listen, no woman, no family ought to endure our violence. It has no place. That's not strong. That's weak. And I had a whole section that I pulled from my notes because we don't have time. But it was going to be a conversation with women about emasculating men. Read several articles about it. I just wanted to have a conversation we can't have. That if you ever compare your man to another man unfavorably, whew, you belittle your man. You disrespect. I mean, when God talked to us about marriage, he said, husbands, love your wives, Ephesians 5. And wives, respect your husbands. Man, we got to protect and serve. Wives, respect your husbands. You'll notice in Scripture, it didn't say in that text, husbands, respect your wives. And it didn't say, wives, love your husbands. So I think it's implicit. The point is this, God knows that pushing the button of disrespect will ignite anger in a man like nothing else. Wives, how are you doing with your part in this? But we don't need to get into all that conversation. Men, nonetheless, we're responsible. And unchecked anger blows up marriages and families, and the shrapnel is so destructive. Where do you get the strength to be a tough man? Spiritually tough, and break through this. And by the way, there's a good side to anger. I mean, Jesus got angry without sinning. When they violated the Father's house, what did Jesus do? He got angry. He was indignant. Man, there are times we need to get angry. I mean, you threaten my wife, my children, people I care about, can I tell you something? I'm going to get angry. Times we need to get angry. Jesus stood for the innocent and the vulnerable. Man, we ought to band together and be angry about things. When this church bands together and we stand against sex trafficking of children, there's a reason we ought to be angry as men and as a church and stand against that kind of stuff. Isn't it true? We as a people should be angry over those kinds of things. That's righteous anger. There's a good side to anger because it can protect. Oh, but Samson would say, I want to tell you something, burning with anger, that's just all about pacifying you rather than protecting others. It'll undo your life. It undid his. He said, see, if you think this world is just physical and you get all wrapped up in it, you'll tend to mismanage anger. Here's the second thing. He says, you'll tend to mismanage lust. Let's just go there. Let's just be honest, God. Let's have a candid conversation. You'll tend to mismanage lust, which becomes all about this kind of satisfy me thing. Samson was 20 years old in chapter 14, and he walks into the Philistine territory in Timnah, about 6 miles away from home. And you're waiting because here's the one God has put his hand on. Here's the anointed future leader. This one's going to change everything. I mean, you just can't wait. You're waiting for the story. What happens next? I mean, what happens? How does he call Israel to arms to rise up? He leans into this supernatural power that God has given to him. Oh, what's going to happen next? How's he going to deliver and lead Israel? And what happens? He's walking along. You're waiting. What comes in this story next? You know what happens next? He sees a hottie and gets all horny. That's what happens. In fact, that just defines the rest of his life. He gets all wrapped up in lust, and that becomes his life, and it leads to his end and his ruin. Never rises up, never becomes the man who protects and serves. Israel's never released, delivered, and rescued. The guy ends up putting himself in prison, because you know that's what he did. When he gave in to Delilah, it was nothing more than setting himself up. Yes, the Philistines gouged out his eyes and threw him in prison. Yes, he was made a mockery of his former self. But men and women, he put himself in prison. Yes? Yes? Men, we put ourselves in prison when we indulge lust. And see, we're having candid conversations about some of the most difficult issues in life, anger. Lust. This here is the truth about every man's battle. To break the temptation of lust and give your life to serving others is no small achievement. It's easier just to indulge yourself and go from a man to a boy. You see, the truth is, sex is an incredibly kind and perfect gift from God. When you abuse it and pervert it, men become boys and do things as stupid as Samson and imprison ourselves and other people and cost us God's best. But God made us to enjoy sexual intimacy. God created women in such a way that they would be attractive to men. I mean, when God showed up with Eve. Adam, quit naming the animals. And we all know why Adam ate the apple. I mean, we know he was supposed to protect her. But we know what she said. Eat the apple or you get no more of this. What's the guy to do? So Adam ate the apple. It's not his fault. That's all in the original Hebrew text. I haven't found it yet, but I know somebody more scholarly would find it. And when God comes for the accountability, what does Adam do? What every real boy does. Blames her. She did it. You brought her here. It's kind of your fault. if you think about it. If you hadn't brought her, we would have just been naming animals. Everything had been fine. More seriously, men, it's a real battle for purity. Let's not kid ourselves. What's going on behind the scenes in private places, in our minds, what we let our eyes join, what we obsess over, it's a real battle. It's tough to stand against the temptation of pornography, movies, strip clubs, indecent proposals from the Delilahs of life. Chat rooms, flirting. No, this is a real battle. And it will take a strength that most of us do not have, because physical willpower will not win this one. And we've got to settle somewhere in our soul that God created us for this beautiful sexual intimacy that would happen inside His sacred design of a vow of marriage between one man and one woman who would commit together for life, and that would surrender under God's design, enjoy the beauty of what He created. And candidly, it has been proven repeatedly that the most healthy and whole life you can have is when one man commits to one woman for life. And that is proven repeatedly that that is not only God's design, but everybody wins. Marriage, society, the kids, etc. And we got to figure out what we're going to fight for. It's a very easy thing for wives to say, oh, I don't get it. No, stop. Of course you get it. You see, you know that this world is going to invite all of us into temptation and perversion. Let me just make a couple of statements that I know every married couple understands. So hear me. Wives, women, don't give your husband an excuse to go look elsewhere and wander. I mean, hang on. Men, don't excuse yourself to go look elsewhere and wander. And wives, every man's going to wrestle with this temptation. You say, well, no, not everybody. All right. 95% will confess to it. The other 5% say it's not a problem for them, but their first struggle is lying. So I don't know. What do you... I don't know. I think it might be every man's. And you understand it because it's what you used to get him attracted to you early on. In fact, let's just go there. See, the truth of the matter is, if this multi-billion dollar or trillion dollar industry of porn and the like could be wiped out, if every female would be a godly woman, there would be nothing to look at. Hang on. And if every male were a godly man, they wouldn't look anyway, and it would bankrupt the industry. The problem is on both sides, and society is in prison for it. And men, we're going to have to be honest to God about the battle. We're going to have to battle against lust. And what do you do? How do you battle against that? If you want to move from lust to love, if you want to move from satisfy me in prison to really serve others, what do you do? Are you ready? Run. Well, what'd I say? Run. Real men run. Say that to your neighbor right now. Just tell your neighbor here and across campus. Just say, real men run. Say it. What's the answer? Real men what? Run. They run. You say, are you kidding me? No. That's the answer. Everybody has a 2 to 3 second window when temptation comes, and you have a 2 to 3, you don't have to conquer all temptation. What you have to do is conquer a 2 to 3 second window. The moment temptation comes, you're coming to the computer, you're like, oh man, it starts rising up, temptation, run! In the first 2 to 3 seconds, just run, leave it. You get an indecent proposal, run! You get in the chat room, you start, oh no, 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 run! All the guys are going to a strip club, run! Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. If Samson showed up and we had a conversation, he would tell you What I failed to do was run. And I ruined my life. See, Samson suffered for his anger and his lust, and so did all of Israel. They never did gain their freedom from their enemies. And FYI, when men fail to rise up and protect and serve, then they tend to shrink down to boys and become nothing more than people who blow things up in their anger and indulge lust. And marriages lose, families lose, kids lose, society loses. And where do you get the strength? I mean, what do you do? See, once again, I think if Samson sat here, he would say, let me tell you the end of my story. Let me tell you what to do. I wrote it in your notes. Spiritually tough men protect and serve others. We've already said it, but let's say it again. Spiritually tough men do what? Protect and serve others. And here's what he would say. Make it your mantra of manhood. I think he would. I think he would say, listen, it is what you strive for. It is how you measure manhood. It is what you expect of yourself. It's what you raise in your boys. The reality is this. If we're going to change and become tough, spiritually tough men, we're going to have to create a mantra like this. Spiritually tough men protect and serve. And therefore, the second thought, spiritually tough men pray. They do what? See, because you can't pull this off on your own. It's not a physical reality only. It will take spiritual power. Look at the end of his life. You can go right there to chapter 16 of the book of Judges. And what you'll find is at the end of his life, listen, the strong man finally got it. He finally figured it out. He's been in prison. His eyes have been gouged out. He's been blind. He's been made a mockery. He has suffered intensely. He's 40 years old. He finally figured it out. And now he prays. He says, Sovereign God, which means he bows. Men, do you bow before God or do you bow up against him? When's the last time you sincerely bowed in your heart? He said, Sovereign God, remember me. Almost confessional, because he knew that he'd forgotten God. And sometimes our prayer needs to be, Sovereign God, meaning I'm bowing, remember me, because I know I've forgotten you. And the next line, let me give it to you. Please, God, strengthen me. Say it with me. Please, God, strengthen me. Say it again. Please, God, strengthen me. Again, please, God, strengthen me. He finally figured it out. My strength is not physical. The strength I need to become a tough man is spiritual. A truth that I have been meditating on for some years comes from 2 Chronicles 16:9. Here's what it says. The eyes of the Lord reigns throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. Men, I want to come back to that prayer at the close of this service. But as I turn the service over to the campus pastors, consider the questions I put at the bottom of your teaching notes. Challenge yourself with these. Here they are. Have you separated the physical from the spiritual? Are you mismanaging anger or lust? And how do you need to practice, pray, and obey? Because tough men pray.